Welcome to 5-Minute Journal Club, TROP2 directed antibody drug conjugates in the management of breast cancer. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. I met with Dr. Kevin Kalinske from the Winship Cancer Institute at Emory University in Atlanta to discuss a number of key papers and presentations. And to begin, he commented on data from the TROPION-Breast01 Phase 3 study, comparing the TROP2-directed antibody drug conjugate datopotamab deruxtecan to chemotherapy in patients with hormone receptor-positive HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer in patients no longer candidates for endocrine treatment. This study and others led to the January 2025 approval of Dato-DXd in this setting, and another presentation focused on patient-reported outcomes demonstrating significant improvement in all parameters studied, including time to deterioration in the following factors: global health status, physical functioning, pain, other symptoms and functioning, and enroll functioning and fatigue, as well as patient-reported adverse events. To begin, I asked Dr. Kalinske to comment on his take on Dato-DXd's approval and the patient-reported outcomes data.
You know, I think that it's nice to have another option available for our patients. You know, we see efficacy based upon the TROPION-Breast01 study. So right now, Dato-DXd is just approved in patients with hormone receptor-positive HER2-negative disease. And, you know, again, in this study, this included patients who've had one or two lines of chemotherapy. And so it was an earlier population than what we saw with the TROPiCS study, which led to the approval of sacituzumab govitecan in this setting. And so I think that, you know, if we're distinguishing between the two drugs, Dato-DXd is given once every 3 weeks, and we don't have direct comparisons, but we have compared to physician choice chemotherapy. And I think, you know, to answer your question about how we consider the patient experience in this, you know, we want to not only make sure that we're giving a drug that is more efficacious, but also that we are giving something that is not worsening their quality of life. And so we did have data that looked at different measures, including, you know, time to deterioration or time to the experience of pain. And really across the board, if you compare physician choice chemotherapy to Dato-DXd, things numerically looked better with improvements in hazard ratios comparing Dato-DXd to physician choice chemotherapy, which is just emphasizing the point that, you know, ADCs have displaced chemotherapy in this setting. In breast cancer, a lot of the treatments that we're giving cause neuropathy, right? So we have eribulin and we have a taxane, and that can be really rate limiting for patients. I have patients in my clinic where I haven't been able to give a certain chemotherapy because they already have toxicities from the last one that they had received. A good number of these patients would have received a taxane in the operable setting. Not everybody, but a good amount would have. And I think that when we look at, you know, the PROs and then the fact that patients felt better, their pain was under better control, because this is, of course, an important point when we're treating patients with endocrine-resistant disease. You know, that's a really important consideration, in particular for our patients with ER-positive disease, you know, who have multiple lines of treatment, might have received multiple lines of endocrine-based treatments with or without targeted therapies. This is a marathon for our patients. This is not a sprint. And so we want patients to be on whatever drug for as long as they can tolerate and or it's effective.
I guess it's kind of a classic thought, but, you know, I think it's worth kind of taking a step back and saying that we're starting to see, as you were alluding to, a lot of evidence that the efficacy of ADCs is greater than systemic chemotherapy. In your mind, is it, do you think it is pretty much because of with the classic model that you're using a type of cytotoxic you couldn't really give systemically because it's so toxic, and yet you have this targeted drug delivery? Is, from your point of view, is that what that model really driving the efficacy and tolerability?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's that we're able to get levels directly to the tumor that we weren't able to give with systemic chemotherapy. You know, one of our major issues in breast cancer right now, and it's not just breast cancer, some of our colleagues and other tumor types are facing this too, is just the fact that the payloads are the same, right? So we're sequencing potentially one topoisomerase inhibitor after the other. And, you know, this is just highlighting the need that we have for different payloads.
With the approval of Dato-DXd and the prior approval of sacituzumab, clinicians now have two TROP2-targeting ADCs available, and as in many scenarios in oncology, there are no available trial data comparing these agents directly. However, at the last San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium in December, a poster presentation provided a formal indirect comparison of pooled data from 9 randomized clinical trials comparing these agents to chemotherapy. Both Dato-DXd and SG have similar progression-free survivals, and the risk of discontinuation without progression was also similar with both agents, but the toxicity profiles differed, with SG driven by hematologic toxicity and Dato-DXd associated with stomatitis, ocular keratitis, infusion reactions, and ILD. I asked Dr. Kalinske to further distinguish between the risk-benefit profiles of these agents.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this has been a question now that we have more than one TROP2 ADC. Should we be utilizing one compared to another? And you know, my take-home point, even when we look at these pooled data, is that they're really similar. This is my opinion. I think that when we're considering the data, it's also important to keep in mind a few things, right? So with Dato-DXd, the approval came later. So if we're looking at overall survival data, just as a for instance, you know, when we looked at TROPION-Breast01, at least a quarter of patients went on to get a subsequent ADC, which could be influencing the fact that we were not seeing an overall survival benefit. Also, you know, when we look at toxicity, we've talked about some of the distinguishing features between Dato-DXd and sacituzumab govitecan. You know, with sacituzumab govitecan, you're seeing more nausea or gastrointestinal issues and neutropenia, and patients lose their hair. Everybody loses their hair with sacituzumab govitecan. And I think that there's a higher rate of fatigue as well. With Dato-DXd, ocular issues, that low rate of ILD, also some infusion reactions. But I will say in clinic, what influences when we choose one compared to the other, sometimes this really comes down to where is the patient coming from? You know, I practice in Georgia and we have some patients that come from 3 hours or longer away. It's hard to come in 2 weeks out of every three. Those are patients that we will be utilizing Dato-DXd. I have other patients that, you know, don't want to be utilizing prophylactic oral rinses or eye drops. And so those are patients that we would use sacituzumab govitecan. And so it's nice to have these options. But to me, ultimately, I think the drugs are very similar. I think it's important to reiterate that the studies were designed at different times. They have different populations. TROPICS-02 was in a more heavily pretreated population. Ultimately, I think the drugs are very similar to one another in terms of efficacy. The other thing I will say, because this comes up as a question, is, all right, would you sequence Dato after SASE or vice versa? And I will say, when the original phase 1 data came out from TROPICS-01, so not TROPICS-Breast01, TROPICS-01, the phase 1 study that looked in different tumor types, there were a very few patients who received prior SASE who then went on to get Dato and responded. Not everybody, but a subpopulation. There were no predictors of who would respond. I will say that in clinic, I'm not sequencing one TROP2 ADC after another. And I will think about, you know, T-DXd and then giving a TROP2 ADC or vice versa, but no TROP2 ADCs directly after one another.
How much of an issue do you find cytopenias with sacituzumab? There was a study, the PrimeMed study, where they used preemptive growth factors. They also used preemptive anti-diarrheals. Do you use either one of those strategies? And how much of a problem is diarrhea and cytopenias or neutropenia with SASE?
Yeah, I mean, the neutropenia is real. And even in the real world experience, we've reported some data where it showed that up to 50% of people are taking growth factors. And in fact, now the recommendations have shifted a bit, where if you have a patient that you're concerned about, that there's an indication for a primary prophylaxis with a growth factor for sacituzumab govitecan. In terms of the diarrhea, you know, this can really be managed with oftentimes Imodium or Lamotil. I've only had to escalate with atropine or other sorts of agents once or twice. But for sure, the neutropenia is an issue that's been seen in the clinical trials as well as in real-world data sets.
The January FDA approval of datopotamab deruxtecan in advanced hormone receptor-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer has now provided an important treatment option in this breast cancer subtype. However, as with the other approved Trop-2 ADC, sacituzumab govitecan, clinical trials with Dato-DXd are also being done in metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. The Phase 1b/2 Begonia study evaluated durvalumab plus Dato-DXd as first-line therapy in advanced triple-negative metastatic breast cancer and resulted in a striking 79% objective response rate, which was independent of PD-L1 expression, and with a median PFS of 13.8 months. I asked Dr. Kalinske for his thoughts on these encouraging results and the current ongoing Phase 3 trials evaluating Dato-DXd alone and with an anti-PD-1 antibody as first-line therapy of metastatic triple-negative breast cancer.
I think the Begonia study was a good proof of principle. And there's some interesting things that have come out from this study. And so this was a Phase 1b/2. There are different arms in this study. So this is frontline. So this was a frontline trial that looked at different agents in combination. And one of the arms was looking at Dato-DXd at the standard dosing, you know, 6 mg/kg once every 3 weeks, as well as durvalumab. And why this study created the buzz that it did is if you look at the response rate, it was about 80%. And the other thing is that there were benefits seen regardless of PD-L1 expression, because there's been this preclinical suggestion that if you combine IO with an ADC, that there may be additive effects. And what we saw for progression-free survival was about a 14-month median progression-free survival first line. And so this is what generated a lot of interest with this combination. As we've talked about, we have data now of SASE plus Pembro and the ASCENT-04 study and Begonia. Just to pivot back to Begonia for a moment, they really didn't see much added toxicity. You know, of course, there was a laser focus on potential overlapping toxicities like a pneumonitis/ILD situation. But ultimately, you know, we saw that the drugs seemed to combine relatively well together and did serve as the rationale for looking at this in the residual disease setting in TROPION-Breast03.
But now this is first-line metastatic, so this would be, I guess, the prelude to the bilateral study, PD-1 positive and negative, even though they saw benefit with PD-1 negative?
Yeah, so as a result of this study, there was the study that I mentioned, the residual disease setting, but we also have the evaluation of Dato in the frontline, which we're awaiting the results of. You know, we've talked about how we've seen those results with SASE. We're waiting for the TROPION studies that are looking at Dato-DXd in that frontline triple negative setting.
You know, it's kind of interesting, too, that we have our divisions of breast cancer based on ER and HER2, but it kind of looks like the ADCs, at least these TROP2 ADCs, they seem to have similar benefits, whether you're ER positive, ER negative. It seems to not be relevant. And I guess it also brings up the question, would you think there ever would be a future role in HER2 positive disease?
Possibly. You know, TROP2 is highly expressed in HER2 positive disease. And I think that there had been somewhat of a lack of enthusiasm. This was something that we had also proposed to evaluate in the context of HER2 positive breast cancer. But, you know, with T-DXd having such significant benefit in HER2 positive disease, there was a limited enthusiasm earlier on to look at this in the context of HER2-positive breast cancer. But there is a study that is ongoing that's being run from our colleagues at the Farber that is looking at SASE plus TRAS in patients with previously treated HER2-positive metastatic disease. So we'll get a sense of that combo.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think everybody got a big surprise with the Patina study with CDK and HER2-positive disease. But I'm kind of curious, how often do you run into a situation where you have a patient with HER2-positive metastatic disease who's already gotten, you know, trastuzumab, pertuzumab, T-DXd, T-DM1, tucatinib? Do you have people with good performance status there where you need an option, or you hardly ever see that anymore?
We do see it. And, you know, as you mentioned, this is an increasingly crowded space. You know, there's been the question of, oh, is there a role for cell therapy here? What about bispecifics? What about other new ADCs? Here at Emory, we have a few novel ADC trials. And I will say that accrual, and this wasn't just here, like across the board, was a little slow because this required T-DXd progression. But we're seeing these patients now. And, you know, the accrual for these studies have started to pick up, unfortunately, because there is a need for some patients post-T-DXd.
At Research to Practice, we love review articles, particularly those that explore novel treatment strategies. And a recent paper published in Frontiers in Immunology brings up a number of interesting, important clinical and translational research questions related to TROP2-targeting ADCs, including a variety of combination strategies. I asked Dr. Kalinske for his take on the issues discussed in this interesting paper.
TROP2, first of all, in breast cancer is highly expressed in breast cancer. You know, early on, there were evaluations with immunohistochemistry. But one of the questions that has come up is, you know, what are the resistance mechanisms to TROP2 ADCs? And there's some elegant data that came out of Mass General Hospital that looked at this and saw, you know, maybe there were new TOP1 mutations that were being developed. And the other thing that has really been shown both in the lab has been the potential for combining TROP2 ADCs with other agents. And like, just as a for instance, when sacituzumab govitecan was first coming out, there was some preclinical data about combining it with PARP inhibition, including in the context of BRCA wild type. And those models really responded well to the combination. And this has been something that has been attempted in patients, but ultimately it was toxic. It was hard to combine, even with different dosing of the PARP inhibitor. But there remains an interest in combining TROP2 ADCs with other agents, in particular with IO. And, you know, we do have some clinical data about combining Dato-DXd with Durva, for instance, in the frontline metastatic setting. And those data were quite interesting. Even outside of having PD-L1 expression on the tumor, we saw some really robust responses up to about 80%, which also served as the rationale for evaluating those sort of combos in the residual disease setting, post-neoadjuvant chemo and IO, you know, for patients with triple-negative breast cancer.
And of course, we saw, I guess, a practice changing, I don't know if it was practice changing for you, study at ASCO that Sarah Tlaney presented in triple negative disease, combining sacituzumab with pembrolizumab. Any thoughts about that? And is that going to be your first line therapy in triple negative if you're able to?
Yeah. The quick answer is yes. You know, there's some things that were presented at ASCO 2025. This was a big year for breast. We had a number of studies that were presented. We had the plenary session, a number of phase 3 trials that were presented. I will say CENTO4 looked at SASE plus Pembro versus physician choice chemotherapy plus Pembro, frontline study, PD-L1 positive. To me, this was like the clearest of the impact on clinical data, right? We saw this improvement in progression-free survival. It's a little early for overall survival, but there does seem to be a trend that way. Also, one of the nice things about how ASCENT-04 was designed is that crossover was allowed, and we'll see how that impacts survival. But to me, this is going to become the standard of care in the frontline. And also, we saw by press release that ASCENT-03, which is again frontline PD-L1 negative SASE versus physician choice chemotherapy, that SASE is leading to an improvement in progression-free survival. We haven't seen those data quite yet, but I do suspect that ADCs are going to become frontline in triple negative disease.
And I guess we could say that there are ongoing trials that sound very, very similar, at least to me, with Dato. I think in that case, they're combined with their durvalumab with PD-1. So I guess it could be that at some point in time, we're going to be choosing between Dato and Sassy again in triple negative first line.
I think that's right. I think the other thing that's going to happen, similar to what we're experiencing in metastatic ER-positive disease with the CDK4/6 inhibitors, is we have ongoing studies as well as completed studies in that residual disease setting in triple negative breast cancer, like including TROPiCS-Breast03, which is essentially patients got chemo plus IO, had residual, for the most part, got IO, and then go to surgery. And if they have residual disease, they are randomly assigned to get Dato, Dato-Durva, or physician choice chemotherapy, which is essentially capecitabine with or without Pembro. That study's been completed. And I'm bringing that up because let's say that's a positive study. How's that going to influence what we're doing in the metastatic setting? You know, these drugs are just continuing to move up. And so I think that that is something we're going to be seeing in the next year or so.
So one more question, sort of, you know, and while we're talking about sort of mechanisms here, is this issue of can you measure TROP2? We hear this in lung cancer as well. Quote, all these tumors have TROP. It's hard to tell. But there was a study. They looked at some kind of membrane assay for TROP2 in lung. I think it actually was with the Dato study where it looked like it did predict. Do you think the day will ever come where we're actually going to have a TROP2 level that'll be helpful?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, Neil, I actually think that this is a huge issue currently. One, because how we've been measuring TROP2 in each of the studies is with a different assay. And by that, I mean for SASE compared to Dato, compared to the ADC that is in development, you know, originally in Asia, that is, you know, SASE-T. You know, all of them are utilizing different stains and different ways of evaluating it. And so what we've seen with SASE is, you know, in the large studies, we went back and we looked at TROP2 expression. As you mentioned, most patients have high H-score or higher medium H-score. There was this suggestion in those with low TROP2 that they didn't benefit from SASE in the same sort of way, but the population was too small to really make much of.